just roll with the punches and just be continually reassessing and just think, right, what is the biggest opportunity open to this business at the minute? And then don't trust anybody else with that opportunity. No one else is going to seize an opportunity and attack it with the vigor that you will. So go after that opportunity yourself and then try and just thread everything else that you were doing in the business to other people. But yeah, just go after any opportunity.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ben Morton Leadership Podcast. It's the weekly show that brings you inspiring interviews with senior leaders and genuine subject matter experts, all designed to help you be the very best leader you can possibly be. It's my gift to you, and it's completely free. In today's episode, I'm talking with Alex Higham, the CEO and founder of Exhale Healthy Coffee, who is living proof that following your passions can create remarkable success. After spending 15 years being unfulfilled as an accountant, Alex took a bold leap to pursue his passions in coffee, health, and fitness. In the midst of lockdown 2020, Exhale Healthy Coffee was born, revolutionising the UK coffee market with its unique approach to health-conscious coffee consumption. Under Alex's leadership and guidance, Exhale rapidly became one of the fastest-growing coffee brands in the UK, carving out a new niche in the industry. Which, carving out a niche, is something he talks about in this episode. And I can also attest to the quality and great taste of Exhale Healthy Coffee. This isn't a paid advertisement, but I'm a customer. I love Exhale Coffee, and now it's the only coffee I drink when I'm at work in the office. In this conversation, in this episode with Alex, we explored the idea of following your passions and thinking about work as a game. We look at how to tackle the tough things, those tough decisions that crop up both in business and in life. And as a voracious reader, Alex shares some of his tips for ensuring that all of that new knowledge that we're getting and consuming through reading many, many books actually gets turned into action. And he shares some of his insights, having read, in his own words, nearly every book there is on the subject of marketing. He tells us what some of his top tips and takeaways are, whether we are an entrepreneur, a leader, or indeed working in a marketing function somewhere. But that is enough by way of an introduction. So let's dive right in and please enjoy my conversation with Alex Higham, the founder and CEO of Exhale Healthy Coffee. Alex, can we start off by me asking you to share your very first leadership experience in the workplace, sort of good or bad, and what you took from it and how that's shaped what you do now?
When we launched the business, we had, initially there was going to be two other co-founders, and I had to break, and you know, for one reason or different reasons, you know, very amicable reasons, we just wasn't right. So I had to break up with two co-founders in the first kind of 6 months. It was so difficult, and we got on so well, and they'd become really good friends, really close, like almost like a second wife or husband, you know, they would become so close. And actually it was one of them, the conversation, I was in floods of tears having the conversation, and it was so difficult to do, but I knew, and my gut knew that it was the right thing to do, and it needed doing weeks before I actually had the conversation. And I'd spent weeks just not sleeping, like having terrible night's sleep, having nightmares, night sweats. It was just kind of ruining everything. It was just weighing on my mind. And then when I finally had the conversation, just such a weight was lifted, and it was kind of actually almost semi-expected by them as well. And it was all very amicable. And, you know, there's another theory around eating the frog, which is, you know, you're probably familiar with. But it's just like, if there's a hard thing that needs doing in the business, and by hard, I mean earth-shatteringly, brutally, like difficult thing, just attack it head on. Don't wait. Listen to your gut. Just do it. Do it, and do whatever it takes, whatever's needed. And don't wait. Don't hesitate. And act quickly. And now that's how I approach everything in the business. And we might have from anything. We might have a disaster around, for example, like the Royal Mail not picking up post one day and a whole load of orders coming in and just, we've got to get shit out the door. So I would literally just go, right, roll up my sleeves. And I've got so many memories of just going down to our cold utility room, which is unheated in the middle of the winter, and just working all through the night, literally just to get the orders packed and out the door in time. So just whatever it takes, do it and don't hesitate.
Yeah, I love that story. And there's straight away sort of going off piece, there's two things that spring to mind. One is, I guess, something to share and add to what you've just said. And the second one is a question for you. But literally before we jumped on this call to hit record for this episode, I was doing some prep for a Facebook Live session I'm about to do around motivation. I'm talking about actually some of the main things that demotivate people. And one of the big ones is when a leader or manager avoids poor performance, be that output or behavior. Now, I'm not saying that's what you did with your initial co-founders, that they weren't performing, like you didn't share the details, but so often, because that's a hard thing to do, to act and deal with someone in your team who's not performing, I see so many leaders and managers that avoid it, and it weighs on us, the rest of the team start to notice it. So you're so right about just having to tackle those hard things, right? It's part and parcel with being a leader or a founder of a business. You have some really hard things as well as some really wonderful things to do.
Yeah, the buck stops with you. No one else is going to come to your rescue. No one else is going to do this. It has to be you who does it. And you have to be really comfortable with just removing yourself from a situation, removing all of your preconceived notions of how you should behave and everything you've done before in past lives, and just act in the best interest of the business. And it's just, you're a vessel for delivering what needs to be done in the business, because no one else will do it. It's got to be you.
The question I said I had, based on what we've both shared so far, is, so this is the second time kind of we've met, right? Once previously to plan for this episode, you just come across as such an energetic, positive person. Like, people are listening to this on audio, but you've constantly got a smile on your face and a twinkle in your eye, Alex. So like, where does your energy and positivity come from? Is that something you have to work at in the hard times, or is that naturally you, and you think that's what carries you through the tough times as a leader and business owner?
Nah, it's part of the coffee, but I'd say that's a journey. That's been part of the journey, the part of the learning process. And actually, one of the biggest things that I've learned launching this business is that when I first launched it, I still thought of it as work. I brought everything that I thought of as work in the past, and we might come onto this in a bit, but like, my old career, my old job wasn't right for me. And I had this, you have this preconceived notion of what work is, and work's a bad thing. You know, you have to work, you're forced to work, and you work to live and fund your life. And I launched the business thinking of work as just like that. It's work's this thing. And the kids would come to me and they'd try and interrupt me to play or do something, and then I'd say, no, I'm working, I've got to work. And the thought of having to work through the night, long hours, weekends, evenings, stressed me out. And that kind of physical, mental manifestation of that stress was really crippling. But over time, something happened where I started suddenly seeing it as, actually, it's not work. I've crafted this business to embody everything that I love in life. These are my three passions in life: coffee, health, and fitness. And if I wasn't working, I would be doing something very similar on one of those three things as a hobby, and I'd call it fun, I'd call it a hobby. So over time, I now think of work, and I kind of don't really call it work anymore. I see it as me getting an opportunity to do what I love doing. So if I spend some time on a weekend working, it's like, it's ultimately, this is what I love doing. This is my hobby, my passion in life, and it's not working, and I don't see work as work anymore. And it's just, it's fun. The whole thing is fun. And actually, Alex, there's a guy called Alex Hormozi, who's a quite famous podcaster now. And he starts them by saying the most successful people see business as a game. And actually, I see this as a game now. And it feels like I'm in one big game of chess. I love chess. And I feel like I'm living in one big game of chess, constantly strategizing 3, 4, 5 moves ahead. And there's no work involved in it. There's nothing negative. This is just fun. So I'm in a phase of my life where I'm just really enjoying it. So
tell us a bit more about that, Alex. Because I've heard people mention that before, seeing work as a game, as a great book I read called The Great Game of Business, which very much focuses on that. But on a practical day-to-day basis, if you are seeing your role in Exhale Coffee as a game, what does that mean you're doing? How does that mean perhaps you're showing up differently to somebody who has left the corporate world as you did, taken all of those strongly defined perceptions and conventions about work and just lifted them, shifted them into running their own business? Like, what does seeing it as a game, how does that manifest itself?
You have to decide what the game is for you. What do you want? What do you enjoy getting out of the business? What is it? And for some people, it might initially, it was, I really enjoyed building the community side of the business, and I still do. But currently the game is trying to figure out what's going to move the needle on the growth of the business, and then mastering that, and then focusing my time on that, and then handing over kind of other stuff. So it's kind of, currently we have this big opportunity around Meta, Facebook ads. We've never really done it before. We have a big opportunity there, and it's serving video ad content, but it's a huge opportunity, and I know it will move the needle and could potentially deliver some pretty substantial, rapid growth in the business. So I've now shifted my attention, and the game now has become, how can I master video ads and creatives, testing loads of different types of ads? And it's just really bringing out that science geek in me, the data analysis, like looking for trends and patterns and analyzing things and going, if we serve this type of ad, what's the immediate impact? What's the long-term impact? If we do this type of ad, if I'm in this video, and then, you know, we figured out that videos of me work best in the ads. And, you know, I was a massive introvert. Well, I am a massive introvert, but
I could have told you that just from meeting you twice. I could have told you videos of you would work best.
I know, how funny that. But I am a massive introvert, and that kind of thing would have like filled me with absolute dread and fear. But, you know, because I will do anything for the business, I'm like, right, I will just embrace it. I will master it. And now I genuinely think that I probably have mastered the art of video ads, crafting the perfect video ad, thinking about the hook, the kind of the middle, the call to action, how to analyze them in Ads Manager, and looking at hook ratios and all these different CPMs and CPA, whatever, you know, things I'd never thought of before. But it's been really fun learning about it, and it's been really fun analyzing it and looking for trends and optimizing it. And that's the game currently. You know, in 6 months' time, it might be something else, and it just transitions. And I'm seeing the benefit of that in the business flowing through with growth and revenues and this kind of thing. So it changes. I think the game evolves.
Yeah. So it's a bit like doing PE for your GCSE, right? Whereas for this term, this is the game and I'm learning this game. Next term, it's a different game. I'm going to crack that, but kind of going all in a specific area.
Exactly. It is. And it changes, and just roll with the punches and just be continually reassessing and just think, right, what is the biggest opportunity open to this business at the minute? And then don't trust anybody else with that opportunity. No one else is going to seize an opportunity and attack it with the vigor that you will. So go after that opportunity yourself, and then try and just thread everything else that you were doing in the business to other people. But yeah, just go after any opportunity.
You've just briefly touched on the follow-up question I wanted to ask. So if you're really heavily pursuing all of those new opportunities, like right now it's ads, Meta ads, how do you make sure that all the other business plates keep spinning? Because that's like a challenge I wrestle with all the time in my business. Like, there's loads of stuff where I'd like to really focus on and master. But for all of us, the challenge is so often one of time, right? If I'm really want to focus on that and geek out on that, it's hard because there's all these other things I still need to keep going. And yes, there are some things I can dial down or stop, but that's the challenge, right? Like, what's your approach for solving that perennial problem?
Well, you can't spend all of your time on the game, on hunting the latest opportunity. So for me, I'd say there's two things: time management, and then there's setting the right processes. So on the time management side, right now it's the first two or three days of the week are about kind of catching up, team meetings, all the other stuff. Then by Thursday and Friday, I try and have cleared as much of that as possible. And then Thursday and Friday, I can literally just not open my emails, not open WhatsApp or Slack or any of these things. And like, well, at least one of those days, I'll spend a full solid day just sitting, scripting ads, recording ads, brainstorming things, doing that side of things, and then sending them off to the editors. So earmarking solid chunks of time, like whole days or whole half days, to actually spend time on whatever the latest opportunity is. So that time management thing is like really important, because there's never being able to switch off comms is huge, because there is always another email coming in to respond to and to work on. And there is always someone trying to contact you and ask you questions in dozens of different places, so many different places. And it never stops. That never stops. Like, everyone wants something from you. But you just have to go, right, for now, for the next 4 hours, I'm just going to ignore it all and just focus on this task. And it doesn't take much, you know. And then the other one is processes. So most of the time in the business, I'm setting up processes which are infinitely scalable. So everything I do and everything that I get us to do across the whole business is we judge everything with this bar of, is it infinitely scalable? And if not, then we don't do it. So it's things like our email newsletter, for example. We spend a lot of time, put a lot of energy into having a really good weekly email newsletter. And it goes out to like 68,000 people now, and it has a really good open rate, and it's really well engaged. But we could spend the same amount of time writing that newsletter to 2,000 people or 200,000 people. It's infinitely scalable. So that's a really valuable use of my time. And I'll put in these processes and these things across the business that just like really make everyone efficient. Everyone knows what they're doing. And it's really important, I think, to focus on the right tasks.
It is a great newsletter as well for every listener. Like, I think a couple of months ago, I started subscribing and drinking your coffee, which I love. But go on, because I've been so impressed. If people want to find out more and maybe get that newsletter, where do they need to go?
I think just head to our website, and there'll be some kind of email sign up form on there. But yeah, it's like the email newsletter. I really enjoy writing it, and it's really fun. Me and Kirsty spend a good chunk of our time, maybe probably about kind of 6 or 7 hours each week, writing an email newsletter. And we just write it as if we're writing to a friend. If there's a word in there that I wouldn't say to my mum, then I write it out, I take it out. You know, there's no marketing jargon, you know, it's just got to be totally authentic. I think it resonates well with people. So
back to something you said earlier, Alex, around sort of how you structure your week and Thursday, Friday, like emails off, kind of Slack's off, WhatsApp's off. Like, what was your journey with being able to do that? Because that's something I talk about quite a lot. And like, for some people, the mere thought of doing that is absolutely terrifying. And I think, yes, for people listening, if you are doing a job in a corporate world, that might be a little bit harder to do. I think maybe for you and I, maybe it's a little easier because we are running our own businesses. But when I started doing a similar thing, it was terrifying to start with, because you have all these thoughts racing through your head, like, what if I miss an email from a client? What if I don't respond? What if they ditch me because I didn't get back to them quick enough? So like, how did you rationalize that and get to the point where you could do it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy, but on those days in the morning and in the evening, I do catch up on emails. So I'm a really good morning person. Like, my mornings are a gold. I wake up at 6 every day, and the kids and the family in the house don't really wake up until 7:30 and then maybe 8 o'clock. So I get normally 2 hours to myself, and normally I'd spend those 2 hours like running or at the gym or doing some kind of other exercise or breath work type practice. More and more these days, I'm breaking it up a bit more. So for example, if on the Thursday and Friday, I'm more likely to get up in the morning and do like half an hour of kind of warm up type stuff. And then I'll get an hour in of quiet time before, you know, on my own quiet time to catch up on emails, lay the foundations for what will be a quiet day for me, get some stuff done. And then the world wakes up, I switch off. And then in the evening, I'm back on it again. But because I don't see it as work, it's all fun, it's all part of the package of the game, I actually don't mind working into the evenings. So I'm quite happy to sit at my desk and work until 10:30, until the moment I get up and then go to bed. So I do that most evenings. So I don't mind them working in the evenings if I switch off during the day, especially.
Yeah, cool. Following this theme of seeing it as work, seeing it not as work, what was your career before starting founding Exhale Coffee? Because you said when we spoke before that you spent sort of, I think it was 15 years planning your escape. So what was it you were trying to escape from, and why? What was that planning all about?
So I started my life as an accountant. I seem a qualified accountant, but always worked in industry. So worked in lots of different industries, towards the end, FTSE 100 companies in their financial management department. So we'd have like a £100 million IT project and I'd manage the financial side of the budget. And it'd be like a five-year project. So yeah, financial planning and analysis and budgeting and forecasting and that kind of thing. I did for 15 years and it was... I obviously learned a lot of quite valuable skills, which have been quite useful in the business and around the analysis and that kind of thing, planning. But it was the wrong career for me. I didn't like sitting in an office. And I used to say that every day, it might sound melodramatic, but I used to say that every day I sat at that desk, a little piece of me died. As my personality and my vitality for life would slowly extinguish each and every day. And it honestly felt like that. And I did that for about maybe 16, 17 years, actually. But we used to work for a year, then travel for a year, work for 2 years, travel for a year. And we spent 5 years traveling of those 17 years. So we did 5 years of long traveling. So it was a really good ends to a means. But after a while, I realized that the big part of the traveling was running away from my day life as an accountant. And I was like, right, I need to craft a life that I don't feel like the need to run away from. So that's where the planning of the exit began.
And was there a tipping point or a catalyst that went, do you know what, it's time to make the leap now? Because, again, I suspect there's quite a few people listening to this who feel the same way as you did then, right now. Is it that thing where the sort of pain of staying where you were got so much that it made kind of the leap possible rather than the draw being so powerful, if that makes sense?
It was. I know exactly what it was. It was, I had kids, my first child 9 years ago, and around about the same time, my health just started to absolutely tank. And like, I started getting loads of terrible symptoms, started developing an autoimmune condition, and I was in so much pain every day from stomach issues, joint issues, brain fog. And that was around about the time I hit 30. And in my 20s, I did what everyone should do in their 20s and party hard, work hard. I enjoyed life for everything it had to offer. I lived in London, you know, and I did everything you should do in London. But then I hit 30 and it started catching up with me. And I'd always taken my health and fitness for granted. But then I hit 30 and suddenly I was pulling out of more races than I entered. And I was actually started having quite a bit of time off work with different symptoms and different issues I was having. So I was like, and then my social life was really suffering as well. And then I had a baby and, I was kind of parenting at half mast a lot of the time. So I was like, right, something now has got to change. So something has to change. So that was the tipping point, the kind of the health issues forced my hand really.
And you think that was due to what? The unfulfillment of the job?
It's the big part of it. It's a big part of it, I think. And, initially I spent so much time looking for diagnoses for my health issues. I was in and out of every hospital across London, literally looking for diagnoses. Then I was seeing functional medicine practitioners looking for solutions. You know, I was diagnosed with everything. Literally every test came back positive, you know, and even obscure things like SIBO and bloody candida, but then I was getting prescribed statins by the doctors, and then I was getting prescribed the anti-rheumatoid arthritis drugs from my rheumatologist, and not everyone was just like saying there's issues, we don't can't quite pinpoint it, but there's something going severely wrong with your body. All of these things, none of them actually helped, nothing worked, nothing. And then over time, I changed a lot around my diet and health and lifestyle. And even all of that just gently moves things in the right direction. But the biggest change really is just to try and get a sense of fulfillment in life and enjoyment and lust for life back. And, you know, there's a Hindu philosophy of Agni, A-G-N-I, Agni, which is the fire in your belly. And try and get that fire in your belly burning strong. And that supposedly, you know, they say affects your digestion and things, and like probably a lot of my stomach issues could be because the agni in my belly had extinguished, so I wasn't burning as strongly as it could have done. So yeah, get your lust for life back, and then that will flow through to so much else in your health and body and mind.
Yeah, that really resonates with me, Alex. My second job after leaving the army, I went to work at Tesco in doing a learning and development job. And I joined just after the CEO change. So it was probably literally 4-6 weeks in, the new CEO completely changed around the top exec team, which filtered right through the business and suddenly meant like the entire division of Tesco that I was doing this job for just ceased to exist overnight. So therefore my job just vanished overnight. So I quickly sort of scrambled to find myself another job in the business. And I sort of moved into the Global Leadership Academy, looking after all of the online learning that supported the face-to-face stuff. And similar to you, like I learned loads, but it wasn't my passion. Like I didn't love it. I didn't enjoy it. And slowly I started to get a little bit less healthy, like not to the same degree as what you've just shared, but definitely my zest for life just really started to vanish. And it got to the point after about 18 months, I went home and just one day I said to my wife, I'm handing my notice in. I'm going to work for myself. And literally she went, at last? That was the first thing she said. She said, at last. I went, what do you mean? She said, do you not realize how miserable you've been? I was like, no, but by the way, why didn't you tell me earlier? But I think so often we cannot quite realize, can we, until often it's only when things get so bad that we're forced to look in the mirror and take stock that we notice. But that was creeping up on me and I didn't notice. And I could easily have been there 4 years later, still trying to get the promotions and not being me.
It's so hard when, you know, you go down this career path and you do start earning lots of money. And, you know, it's the thought of going from a high paid job to, you know, earning nothing, really very little, it's so hard and it's so scary. But like, I pay myself a 35 grand salary now as the founder of the business, and I have done for the last, you know, 3 years. Before that, in my last job, I was earning about four times that. And I'd say, I don't know, I have no idea what I used to do with the money. I don't know, just save it or something. I don't know. But there is absolutely no difference in my quality of life. Well, there is a difference. My quality of life now is so much better, so much better. And I just don't spend any money and I just don't feel the need to. And, you know, everything I want to do in life is free, really. And yeah, you just make the leap. And people put too much of an importance on salaries and pay grades and, you know, status and positions in a business. And now I've got the ultimate position of a business, the CEO and founder. And it doesn't feel like that. It just feels like I'm just another bloke who's trying to do a job.
Playing a game.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just utterly all meaningless. So yeah, just take the plunge, be brave.
I mean, the other thing as well, there's, I think, more and more in the world today. And like, this isn't kind of me or you trying to convince everyone to leave and set up their own business, right? Because it's absolutely right for some people. It's absolutely not right for others. We're all unique. But one of the things that I started to realize as well is like being employed almost gives a false sense of security. Like you think, oh, I work for this big company, is a sense of security. But it's not really, right? Any of us could be made redundant at any time. Like now, it almost certainly happened to everybody who's employed at some stage. So the security versus risk thing isn't always necessarily that true or realistic, I don't think.
Well, it's not at all. I worked in accounts, so I used to see see what actually goes on in businesses and how people really are just numbers on a spreadsheet. And yeah, you think that, you know, companies value your work more than they actually do is the reality. So
yeah, there's probably some truth in the fact that people are a number on a spreadsheet in some companies, not all companies, right? There are some amazing companies out there that really value their people, but yeah, it's not everywhere. Alex, changing tack slightly, there's something else that you said when we spoke previously that you've touched on today. I think you said when you're setting out on building the business, you pretty much read everything there is to read on marketing. I'm curious to ask you a few questions around that for a couple of reasons, right? Big belief of mine around leadership is that as a leader, we don't need to be the expert in everything that our team or business does. We don't have to have all of the answers. And at the same time, I think it's important, certainly as a MD, CEO, general manager, to have a little bit of knowledge on all of the areas that all the sort of business functions, right? So that being the case, like, what would you say are some of the best marketing insights or golden nuggets that are useful for, I don't know, a a leader, even a marketeer, an entrepreneur to know from all that you've read? What were some of the key things you took away?
Yes, I have read, and I am still reading every single marketing and business book that I can lay my hands on multiple times. Like, I've just picked up another one again for probably the third or fourth time. And then if it's a good book, I'll then look up the author and listen to podcasts interviewing the author to try and learn more about it. And you can learn so much from books. There's such amazing books out there. But in terms of my three things, okay, I thought it'd be quite fun to tailor these three things towards people who might be looking to start up a business. They're not too sure about what kind of business to set up or how to go about it. So first book I would recommend is The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing. And a big takeaway from that one is to create your own category. So for example, I knew I wanted to launch a coffee business, but there's a million amazing coffee businesses out there. And everyone said the coffee world is saturated. So I was like, right, I need to come up with my own thing. So I created the category of healthy coffee. I was like, right, here we go. Healthy coffee, that's our new category. But then they also go on to say it's not enough just to create a category and get first mover advantage. I think the second immutable law is you also have to own the mind of the consumer. So you can't just create a category because someone else will overtake you. So be as loud as possible. Shout about the category. Shout about you, your product. Shout about everything and just get people to stand up and notice you. And then I think it's the third immutable law, which is around have a word that defines the category and then own that word. So our word was healthy. We now own the word, pretty convinced that we do own the word healthy in relation to coffee. So if people think of healthy coffee, they think of us. That's our word. And I feel like we own it, you know. So that's the first one. So if you're trying to come up with a business, create your own category, shout about it, be the most vocal in the category, and then own a word. 22 immutable laws of marketing. There's loads more in there, but that's a good one. The second one is then you should read a book called Eating the Big Fish, which is all about launching challenger brands. Loads of good stuff in that. But I would say approach your new category, your new business with intelligent naivety. So don't be caught up by what was previously the norm in the coffee world, for example. We didn't look to competitors, to other coffee brands, to see how we should do things. I've never worked in coffee before. I'm a coffee geek. I spent years learning about coffee, but I've never worked in it before. I don't care what other coffee brands are doing. I really don't care. I kind of looked at them a little bit. Don't really care. I look at other brands who are top direct consumer subscription brands like Small, laundry detergent brand. I got so much inspiration from them. Huel, so much inspiration from them. Heights, who are a multivitamin subscription brand, so much inspiration from them. So I approached the category of coffee with intelligent naivety and just turned it on its head and was just happy just to break all of the rules. I didn't even know what the rules were to break, but just don't even bother learning the rules. So that's the second one. Okay, create a new category, approach it with intelligent naivety. Then the third one is another amazing book called Made to Stick. And it's all about coming up with sticky ideas. You need some idea, some concept in your business that is going to really stick with people, really resonate, something that people are going to take notice of and remember. And for us in our early days, I was like, right, we've got this healthy coffee, you know, it's optimized for high levels of polyphenols. You know, they're really good because of X, Y, and Z. Loads of antioxidants. You know, there's no mycotoxins, pesticides. And I remember chatting to a friend about this and he was just like, yawn, so boring. Like, who cares? No one's heard of polyphenols. What are these things? What's chlorogenic acid? Like, no one knows about these things. Like, you need a sticky idea, a sticky concept, you know, that people are going to remember. So I read the book and came up with this idea of our antioxidant lab test. We actually asked our community of Instagram followers, we asked them and said, what do you think are the three healthiest foods in our diets? And they said, blueberries, kale, and oranges were the most voted. So I sent off our coffee and I sent off some blueberries, some kale, and some oranges off to this lab. And I got them all tested for antioxidants. And it came back with one cup of our coffee had the same antioxidants as 1.8 kilos of blueberries or 55 oranges, or 1.2 kilos of kale in one cup of coffee. And I was like, all right, that's it. That's a sticky idea. We'll just put that through our marketing, through our website, everywhere, and we'll shout about that. And that's the thing that everyone hears and everyone remembers. Like, 55 oranges in a cup of coffee? Oh my God. People notice it and people remember it and talk about it. So that's the third thing. Have your sticky idea. And like Seth Godin has written a book called Purple Cow, which is a similar kind of concept. And, you know, it's like, you know, there's the four P's of marketing or five P's of marketing. I don't even know what they are because I'm not a marketing person.
Yeah, like product, price, place, promotion. I never remember the fifth one.
Exactly. And he says there's another P now, which is purple cow. When you need your purple cow in a business, that's going to get people to notice it and remember it. So there you go. That's my blueprint for launching a successful business.
I'm always fascinated when I meet and chat to people who've got such an appetite for reading and learning. Like, is there a particular way that you read? What I mean by this, I think for many of us, we can read, but we might sort of like snack on what we're reading, or we read it without intent. So we might read a lot, but then how much do we actually retain and use? Like, do you have any sort of structure or process? You said sometimes you might reread books multiple times. Is there anything else you do?
I do. I mean, I'm actually quite a slow reader in the traditional sense of actually reading physical books. Like, I'm reading a book now, Malcolm Gladwell. Absolutely love Malcolm Gladwell, such a genius. A book of his called David and Goliath. And I'm reading that, and I've been reading that for probably a couple of months now. And I really enjoy physically reading a book because of it helps me kind of check out, and it's just a nice way of unwinding. But the reality is that all of these, the real learnings and the real books that I've read, I listen to audiobooks. I listen to probably a new audiobook every week. I do a lot of running, so I get a lot of time to listen to audiobooks when I'm running. To the extent that I once did a 50-mile ultramarathon, I predicted it would take me 10 hours, and I found an audiobook on growth hacking that was exactly 10 hours long, and I listened to that while I was running. Okay, when I'm at the gym, I'll have an audiobook on. When I'm like out doing some yoga by the pool, I'll have an audiobook on, you know, so I'll be listening to audiobooks. And then I have voice notes on my phone. So if I hear something which is interesting and I apply it to our own business and have some ideas, I'll pause it immediately and leave a voice note on my phone. I also have Trello boards, and I used to just continually be adding notes to Trello boards, but then I discovered voice notes, and it's a much easier way of doing it. And then, you know, every like week or two, I'll just go through the voice notes and write them up and kind of think some more about them. But have loads of ideas. You don't have to like act on every idea immediately, but just make a note of everything that comes to mind in a voice note, so it's there. And even if you don't listen to the voice note back later that day, and it's a few weeks later, you might then think about it in a different way a few weeks later. But just have ideas and make note of them as you go.
So do you then have dedicated time blocked in your weekly schedule to then listen to those voice notes and write them up? Or is that more when you have time, you'll do it? I just wondered how sort of structured and disciplined you are around it.
Yeah, it's more like when I need some fresh ideas or some fresh inspiration. You know, if things are maybe slowing down on whatever the current game is, whatever the current opportunity is, you know, just if there's a bit of like a quiet period, I'm like, oh, I could do with a bit more inspiration. I'll go over my voice notes and there's a whole ton of stuff in there, and then I'm overwhelmed with inspiration. And so voice notes are a good like bank of ideas, I think, ready for when you need them.
Love it. Yeah, very cool. Alex, last question, which is the new standard closing question for every guest on the show. What would you say is the best mistake you've ever made? Or in other words, something that seemed like a mistake at the time, but actually turned out to be very fortuitous?
I'd say the biggest mistake in reality that we have made in this business is we launched the business and we got the pricing wrong. And, you know, it's basics of launching a business, just get the right pricing. And I didn't actually know what the right pricing meant. You kind of look, oh, well, this gives us a reasonable gross profit, reasonable margin, so this must be the right price to charge. But actually, I got the wrong price initially, and we were on the back foot after that. The first 2 years of the business, because of it, we were really unprofitable. Like the first 2 years, we made something like a 200K loss each year. And that's fine when you're like a high growth business. So we're tripling in size each year, and it's fine to fuel that growth with losses, or it was fine in the old world where investment money was quite easy to come by. But in the new world now, like with the economy just crashing like it has, it's so much harder to get investment money in, and you can't run a business unprofitably. Even if you're growing really fast, you need to be focused more on profits. But because our pricing was wrong, I had this naive concept or thought in my head that I wanted to make our healthy coffee available to everybody. So I didn't want to charge too much. And we launched it as £7.95 a bag delivered for free on subscription, which just, you know, given the amount of lab testing we do and everything that goes into it, it was just far too cheap. And then all of our costs were getting put up left, right and center by suppliers. The cost of the coffee we buy went up by 76% in 1 year. So we were on the back foot, and because of that, we were getting further and further from becoming profitable. So last March, I had to think, right, I need to change something significant to change this. And because of the wrong pricing, so many other things weren't possible. So because we charged such a low amount for the product, we couldn't use any 3PL providers. We couldn't outsource our fulfillment because, you know, them charging us £1 per item to pack it, £1 of £7.95, or we'd put our price up to £9 then. £1 of £9 was too big a margin to make it work. So we had to keep our fulfillment in-house. You know, we ran out of cash. For 9 months, we had no cash as a business, and we had to beg, steal, and borrow. Borrowed money from sister-in-law, my parents, everyone who would lend, maxed out all our personal credit cards. We couldn't pay our staff, couldn't pay ourselves. And for about 9 months, we were struggling, battling cash flow issues. But then I thought long and hard about a solution to this and how we can turn the business on its head. And again, I approached it with the intelligent naivety hat on. It doesn't matter. I'll do something that's totally different that no one else does in the coffee world. And I stopped offering our normal size bags and switched the whole business around to only offer double size bags. So coffee comes in 225 gram bags or 250 gram bags. That's standard. Everyone does that. But we switched it up and we only now offer 450 gram bags of coffee. Sounds like a simple thing, but all of our subscribers were paying £9 for a bag of coffee. But overnight, we forced them, we moved them all over to these new £18 bags of coffee, double the price. But what we did was we doubled the cost of a bag of coffee to £18. We doubled the quantity, so there's no net price increase for our subscribers. And we doubled their frequency, you know. So if they were getting a bag every 2 weeks, we extended it to every 4 weeks. So there's no net price increase for our customers. But what it meant was that because of saving on the packaging, saving on the deliveries, saving on all of that kind of stuff, our COGS went down 11%. So overnight, we went from being unprofitable to being profitable. And it literally saved our business. And the whole thought of that, the whole idea, the whole concept was done. The decision was made in collaboration with our customers. So we emailed our email newsletter, our email list, 50,000 people. And we said, look, guys, we need to do something as a business. Like, our prices here have gone up by these amounts. We can't keep charging £9. So we have two choices. We either put up that £9 a bag to £10 or more even, or we do this other method, double the pack size, and there's no net price increase. You guys vote. And we had 2,000 customers vote, leaving, you know, over 1,000 of them left written responses. And me and Kirsty, the co-founder, we had a glass of wine one evening and sat there and read every single one of these responses. And overwhelmingly, 92% of them were in favor of the double packs. But that whole process of bringing everyone in on the decision as well, and we genuinely would have decided one or the other, you know, either one. And as a result as well, there's been a huge environmental gain. Like, we've halved the packaging overnight that we use, halved the amount of deliveries, so our carbon footprint's halved. So there's been, it was a really hard decision as a business to shift your model and force everybody to this. And everyone was like, can't you just introduce 450 gram bags and just like have both? But no one would have moved. No one would have changed. It wouldn't have had any impact. But we forced everyone, took a huge risk to force everyone to move to this new model. And as a result, it saved our margins, gave us an extra 10%, which meant we could suddenly start becoming profitable. Our third year, we were net nil. We didn't make a penny loss. We made like a £5,000 profit. And we had this huge environmental gain. And it was just like literally win, 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 win. But it was a really hard decision to make that we were so terrified of making. But yeah, it was the biggest mistake we made, but the best learnings now. Like, now we're not afraid to do anything like that. But every decision now we make with our customers, we changed our coffee a couple of months ago, but we got our customers to vote on it. And like everything, we just get to bring our customers on board because they loved it and we loved it. And it was brilliant, you know, really brought us all closer together.
But, I mean, that's an amazing story. And what really strikes me about it is you said something earlier on about your newsletter and just how authentic it is. And if you wouldn't say a word to your mum, it doesn't go in the newsletter. I suspect it's because of that, that when you went out to your customers and said, hey, we're looking at doing this, what do you think? Please vote. It's because it did feel, and it was 100% authentic, whereas so often a lot of businesses try and suddenly do that, really engage with customers. But if they've not got the history of 100% total genuine authenticity, people are wary of it, right? But it's, you've really laid the foundations of a business with purpose that cares, that's authentic, which allows you to do that. That's when so many companies, when you try and copy one thing that someone else does, but you've not got the history behind it to back it up, it doesn't work. Like, that's what's unique about your approach, right?
Exactly. But being totally honest with people, we could have said to people, we want to double our pack sizes because there's an environmental, huge environmental gain, and just explained it as that. But, you know, it would have been only a half truth. It wouldn't have been the full truth. The real reality is we need to do it as a business to help our margins, you know, because of our prices getting put up elsewhere and everything. So we explained the full picture. We didn't try and dress it up as something it wasn't, you know. And it's like there's a lot of that kind of smoke and mirrors, a lot of maybe kind of half truths told by businesses and by people. And it's kind of because we're told to think that there are things you shouldn't discuss with your customers. There are things you shouldn't tell people. Like I told you before, what my salary is. Like, people don't talk about salaries. It's like we all get this thing, this feeling when we talk about salaries, and it's like all these things. But why not talk about your salary? Why not share the honest truth of what goes on behind the scenes in the business with your customers? Because I think the most honest, authentic company with the most integrity are the ones that will win in this new day and age. So embrace it.
In the long run. Yeah, 100% agree. 100% agree. And Alex, I think that is a wonderful place to stop. Like, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. Like, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed chatting to you. It's been a wonderful way to spend a Friday morning at the end of the week. Really, really energizing. And again, with sort of total honesty and authenticity, I've been a Exhale coffee customer for a couple of months now. Absolutely love it. I will not drink any other coffee at home or in the office. And we'll pop the link to your website in the show notes, and really encourage everybody listening to check it out.
Thank you for having me on the podcast. And genuinely, like, another thing that I try and do now, as well as kind of earmarking some time in the week to play the game, I also, in our early days, I had a lot of advice and help and support from other people who have businesses and who are well ahead of me, and they were very kind to do that. So I also now set aside time in my week, make sure that if there is someone else who's trying to start a business, who's in a similar situation, who wants to talk, I'm very happy to jump on a Zoom call with anybody. So please reach out, like, honestly. And like, there's so many people now that I speak to, and like, I'm happy to give any advice and help people with any, because I've learned a lot in the last 3 years and I've learned the hard way. And if I can share any nuggets of information that will help someone else not have to go through what I went through to get here, then yeah, I'm very happy to share it. So yeah, please get in touch.
Yeah, just to round that off then, let me share one of my favorite quotes. I think it's actually a Chinese proverb, I think, which basically goes, "The wise man learns from his mistakes. The wiser man learns from the mistakes of others," which I think is so, so true.
There you go. There you go. Be wiser than me and learn from my mistakes, people.
Alex, thank you so much for joining us. Take care.
Okay, cheers. Thanks.
Let me just wrap up this episode by saying a very big thank you for joining Alex and myself. I hope you enjoyed listening to my conversation with Alex as much as I enjoyed having it. But more importantly, I hope that there is at least one golden nugget of information that you can take from this episode and go and act on immediately to make you a better leader and to drive things forward in your team, organization, or even your life. Before you go, please do check out the Leaders Kit Bag episodes. It's the semi-new micro edition of my podcast. Each episode of the Leaders Kit Bag is just 5 or 6 minutes long. We break them down into content themes or blocks. So each episode looks at one very practical leadership tip, tactic, or addresses one particular challenge that we might face as leaders and managers. And once you've listened to those, do please share them with your friends and colleagues so that together we can improve the leadership capability in our companies, charities, and institutions. Because after all, the world needs great leaders now more than ever. Until next time, look after yourself, look after those you've got the privilege and responsibility to lead. And as always, folks, lead on.